in robotic milking systems. We're investigating how knowledge about robotic milking is produced and communicated and sort of circulated amongst the different actors in robotic milking networks. And what I really want to touch on today is the third objective for the project, which is to examine some of the ethical issues which are associated with robotic milking. So what I'd like to briefly think about today is some of the emergent and situated ethical relationships between humans, animals, and robots. Focusing really on some of the more sort of unsettling effects that robotic milking machines have on the ethical relationships that exist in automatic milking systems. For those of you that, can I just click on this and make it work? For those of you that are not familiar with robotic milking systems, some of you might have seen these before. Basically, they were developed in the 1980s and 1990s and became commercially available around 10 years ago. They've proven particularly popular throughout Northern Europe and are increasingly being adopted in the UK. There are about 400 or so farms using them in the UK. The robot works by waiting for a cow to enter the milking box. The cow wears a collar that contains information about that particular cow, how long ago she was last milked, whether she's due some food, and so on and so forth. If it's the right time for the cow to be milked, the robot begins preparing the cow for milking. Rotating brushes are used to clean her teats, and then lasers or infrared sensors are used to find the position of the udder, and the teat cups are attached. And sometimes this takes a while. Sometimes the robot sort of fiddles around for a few minutes trying to find the right places to attach the teat cups. The robot has an arm that continually adjusts as the cow shifts around in the box. The robot also uses information from the collar to allocate a set amount of food and to dispense it slowly so that the cow stands still and doesn't move too much, doesn't get too restless in the milking box. Throughout the milking, a computer on the robot is collecting data about the cow. As you can see here, it's recorded quarter by quarter, so that it tells you whether the teat cups are attached and whether milk is being produced from that particular quarter of the udder. Data is collected on things like the cow's weight, milk yield, body temperature, but also about the milk. So the robot uses things like conductivity sensors to decide whether the milk is good enough to go into the bulk tank or contains unacceptably high levels of bacteria. So sort of this relates back to something Abigail was saying yesterday about mastitis prevention in particular. When the cow is finished milking, the robot arm removes the teacups, disinfects the udder, and the gate to the robot opens to allow the cow to come out. If the cow remains standing too long in the box, some farmers use mild electric shocks or blasts of compressed air to encourage the cow to move out of the box. What really interests us about robotic milking is that it almost completely removes the need for a human presence on the farm. And we have this sort of sense, being on some of these farms, of an almost sort of uncanny quietness about the farm. There was nobody around. There was just that sort of constant hissing and clicking of the machine. It was very, very, very still and very quiet. The cows are kept in a shed with several robots at the end sometimes and are expected to be able to take themselves from milking whenever they feel like it. I'll come back to that idea. Several times a day. Many farmers use this sort of saved labour time of not having to do the milking themselves to go off and do other jobs around the farm or to do off-farm work. Because robots effectively take the place of the farmer, both in terms of doing the physical labour and also helping to care for the cows by taking health measurements and flagging up problems, we thought that robots were interesting as a particular technological intervention which would be likely to remake human-animal relations on dairy farms. The project as a whole, I won't go through this in too much detail, but the project as a whole has used a range of qualitative methods, but the data in this paper that we draw on comes from in-depth interviews with robots using farmers in the UK, and also on our observational work on dairy farms, and all the photographs in the video come from our observational work on case study farms in the UK. As we've seen, and as other people have already discussed over the last couple of days, there are several different ways of approaching the issue of livestock ethics, including discourses of animal rights and discourses of animal welfare. Our approach here, though, draws on concepts of situated ethics and ethical identities. So what we mean by this is ethics which are not described in a normative sense, but are emergent and practical and perhaps tacit ethical positions following people like William Lynn. What we're particularly interested here is the way in which farmers sometimes struggle to reconcile their more abstract beliefs with their practical experiences of raising livestock, and the way in which they look to a wide variety of explanations to try to make sense of these disparities. And the nature of situated ethics means that people are drawing on their own sort of personal histories and their context, and combining this with their experiences in particular moments, in particular situations, to in effect construct ethical identities as livestock farmers. What I'd like to do for the rest of the talk really is to outline some really three themes that have emerged from our data, and I'll briefly outline these by illustrating them with quotations and comments and photographs from the research. The themes are, first of all, cow subjectivity. Secondly, ideas of stockmanship, going back to what Rhoda was talking about earlier on. And thirdly, ideas of animal welfare. So I'll look at these three themes and then finish with some thoughts on changing ethical perspectives in dairy farming. So first of all, an idea of bovine subjectivity, expressed particularly in terms of cow freedom in the context of robotic milking machines. So this first theme then concerns signs of a transition in what's sometimes called the philosophy of dairy farming, from a view that farmers know best how to look after the needs of their animals, to a view that the cows are actually better able to look after themselves if given the freedom to do so. The ethos promoted by robot manufacturers is that cows have a set of natural traits and preferences that conventional milking and herding prevents them from expressing. For example, comparisons are drawn between the natural way in which a cow might be suckled by a calf several times a day versus the forced routine of twice a day milking that puts pressures on the cows and on the cow's udders and makes them uncomfortable. So instead, this notion of cow freedom is born. Some of the farmers said that since getting the robots, they tried to find ways of disturbing the cows as little as possible because their mindset had changed from wanting to control the cow's production to providing for them so that they can achieve their potential naturally. In other words, that sort of concept of natural behaviour is something that seemed to be particularly important. So here we have a farmer saying that, for example, I find that the less you can be in the shed actually messing with the cows, the better things seem to go. They don't like being handled much. They like to be left to their own. Once they're on their own, they like to be on their own, and obviously they travel through the robot by themselves. Manufacturer Layla here saying that the cow's freedom is equated with the cow's happiness. More milk, healthier cows, a happy farmer with free cow traffic in the Layla robot. Free cow traffic refers to the way in which the cows are just allowed to move around the system by themselves. And we have farmers saying things like the cows are very much free to do their own thing, referring to them as free-range cows as opposed to being managed and driven around too much. And the cows have choice. This notion of bovine choice seems to be particularly important. Cows can do what they want when they want. However, although many farmers expressed a desire to let their cows lead freer lives with more autonomy over their daily routine, in reality, this is often at odds with their need to make a profit from milk production. For example, some cows refuse to go into the milking machine regularly enough. It appears that being milked isn't a particularly powerful incentive for cows. And farmers were having to sift through the data which is generated by the computer and then go and fetch the missing cows for themselves and sort of literally push them into the machine sometimes. So the farmers were trying to reconcile their conflicting views that cows like to be milked and somehow know that it's good for them, they should want to go and be milked, with the reality that some seem to prefer not to. So the farmer quoted here identified two such cows, which he referred to as lazy cows, and so subjectifying them in that particular way. So we've got a farmer saying that there are two cows that won't go through. If you left them, they'd just lay there and not do anything. They're lazy. That's referring to teenage children. They're not lame, there's nothing wrong with them, they're given plenty of milk, but they're just lazy, okay, they don't give them monkeys. They just lie there and let it trip out, as this example shows that they're sort of releasing milk, which just sort of flows wastefully into the corridor of the barn. I don't know, they just won't go through without you putting them in. Taken to the extreme, other farmers discussed the possibility of having these lazy cows slaughtered because they're not mentally fit or robotic milking. So we have cows that are lazy cows that only want to go and get milked once a day rather than the ideal of sort of between 2.5 and 3 times a day. and they just lie there. Well, you know, they're now used for robotic systems, so we're slowly but surely weeding them out, and that sort of weeding them out has perhaps particularly ominous overtones as far as these cows were concerned. And it's quite interesting in this context, actually, that some breeding companies, such as Cemex, that supply semen for artificial insemination, are now actually marketing what they call robot-ready semen, trying to breed cows that are physically and mentally suitable for robotic systems. She used to go to that, particularly sort of go-getting aggressive cows. So, in these cases, then, there's a sort of uneasy juxtaposition of beliefs about cows wanting autonomy, and the belief that in some cases the farmers really do know better how to manage the cows' behaviour, better than the animals themselves. Second theme, touching on some of the things that Rhoda was saying before about stockmanship. The second theme concerns how farmers conceive of their identity as stockmen or women. They emphasise the traditional skills of being able to look at cows and understand signals from their appearance or behaviour to spot signs of illness or unhappiness that are built up through years of breeding and raising livestock. The experience of the robotic farmer is very different, however. Their style of work changes to that of more of an office environment, with a routine of creating reports from the data, which is collected by the robot, and using that to calculate averages and to look at exceptions to those herd averages. It's a process of management by exception, if you like, and perhaps goes back in some ways to some of the things that Henry was saying yesterday about the relationship between the individual and the herd, and how that's remade through this particular sort of technological intervention. So the robot opens up these new possibilities for managing the cows without actually being present in the parlour. The manufacturers are again keen to emphasise the greater power this gives to farmers in terms of being able to spot signs of illness sometimes before physical symptoms become apparent. And many of the robot users described a period when they first purchased the robots, when they became sort of engrossed and obsessed by the data, trying to find out things that they didn't previously know about their cows and seeing them in a new way. So another manufacturer here, this is De La Valle, saying, well, first of all, knowledge is power, in a particular sort of resonant phrase. You gain access to a level of knowledge and control unheard of until now. Your cows can no longer hold any secrets from you. Despite these promises of the manufacturers, though, that the robot users will develop even greater knowledge of their herds than their conventional counterparts, it often transpires that the data is not well used in practice, either deliberately or as a result of the time pressures which take the farmers away from their herd. So we have a farmer here saying that basically their reliance on the robot may actually lead to neglect of the cows. So he's talking about a particular cow here and saying, I'll see to her in the morning, and in the morning you're off calving. So this is where a robot has identified a cow as needing some sort of intervention. And the farmer says to himself, well, I'll see to her in the morning, but in the morning you're off calving another cow, or you're doing something else, and then she's left for 2 or 3 days when you should really have dealt with it. By that time she's lost condition, and you should have dealt with it, and you really must be hard on yourself when you're a robotic milking farmer. It's a personal thing. You really must be extremely hard on yourself and disciplined. The robot is not an easy option. And this is in contrast, perhaps, to comments from some other farmers who sometimes have seen the robot as an easy option. They've seen the robot as allowing them to sort of be more distant from their cows. So we have another farmer here saying that almost taking a deliberate choice to use the robots to cut down on the time that they spend with their cows. So I heard a lot of farmers say that when they get a robot, they spend more time with their cows. They still spend the same amount of time working with the cows as they did before. And I think that's madness. Why would you automate a job just to stand in a cow shed? You see, some people like that. They're mad on cows, which I'm not, you see. This was a dairy farmer who told us several times over that he didn't really like cows. He wasn't really keen to spend much time with them. And he was always sort of using the robot as a way to avoid his cows, which is bizarre. So the third theme there, husbandry, welfare. So the final theme is really to do with farmers' attitudes towards the changes that are required by robotic milking systems and their impact on cow welfare. Robotic milking machines generally require a whole host of adaptations to the farm in order to function efficiently. These include things like year-round housing and zero grazing, because if the cows are let out to graze, again, they often don't come back a sufficient number of times to be milked, meaning that the farmer has to, again, go and fetch them in, which really defeats the object of the robotic milking machine. The robots and all year-round housing are also often associated with other automated technologies, such as automatic scrapers, so pieces of metal that basically scrape along the floor on a wire to clear manure out of the stalls. And many cows sometimes find their feet being caught by the scrapers, or they get their tails caught in them, resulting in injury. For many of the farmers in our sample, these changes were quite radical departures from their previous farming practices, which involved letting the cows out to grass as much as possible and using handheld scrapers or tractors to avoid injuring the cows. And consequently, again, the farmers have had to find ways to reconcile their previous beliefs and their practices with the new practices that have been imposed on them. And one example in which this is done comes from a discussion of zero grazing as a particularly sort of controversial practice. This farmer here talks about his new method of mixing a ration of feed for the cows as actually being in their best interest, because he can control what they're eating. While the public might assume that the cows should be out grazing in a field, and there's some sort of particularly iconic image of the dairy cow grazing in the field, he believes it's more responsible to feed the cows a diet rich in nutrients which are not available from grass alone. So he says, people like to see grazing, but I don't think there's any need for it, and I can't control what a cow eats, so I can't control my inputs and outputs. If I've got them inside, they're on the same diet every day, and I know exactly what they're doing, I don't get stomach upsets, and the cows are the same every day, whether it's summer or winter or whatever. As with many aspects of the robotic milking system, the issue here of what's natural, what counts as natural, and whether naturalness is somehow best, makes discussion of grazing problematic. The entire philosophy of robotic milking, as developed by the manufacturers and the technologists who developed the technology, is built around an idea of so-called natural behaviour. But it actually relies on many complex adjustments being made to ensure that maximum productivity remains. So we see farmers adjusting light settings in the barn to simulate night and day and to encourage cows to use the robot 24 hours a day so it's used more efficiently. They use things like one-way gates to encourage reluctant cows to move the right way around the shed so that they have to be milked before they can get to food and drink, for example. And they set the robot to reject cows that have been milked too many times, even though this seems to directly contradict the idea of the cows taking control of their own lives. So having a look briefly at these three themes, I just want to briefly revisit our concept of emergent and situated ethics in the light of arguments made in two recent papers, both in the Journal of Agricultural and Environmental Ethics. The first is a paper by Raymond Anthony, who argues that agricultural, we'd agree with this, that agricultural technologies are never ethically neutral, and that new technologies pose new ethical problems. He argues that contemporary agri-technological systems and practices focus particularly on efficiency and effectively disburden us from thinking about or caring for livestock animals. And there's an echo of this in the term husbandry that I used before. It implies a sort of thrifty or economic sense of management. And in the face of that, he constructs what he calls an environmental virtue ethic of care, seen as caretaking. And this perhaps relates back to some of the things that Roxanne was saying before, although I'm not a philosopher and I haven't got into this in as much depth as she has. But this might be seen as a process of sort of an ethical re-burdening of the people involved in farming and also consuming, eating livestock. So in farming animals, we, whoever we are, should be attentive, responsible, competent and responsive to those animals. This is specifically something that Anthony discusses as the responsibility of two groups. First of all, policymakers and businesses, and Anthony lumps them into a category of what he calls industry technocrats. And these people are responsible for fostering particular modes of agricultural production and intensifying this discourse of efficiency. And the second group is consumers, who should demand that their food is produced more carefully. Interestingly, farmers themselves are given a more marginal role as caregivers rather than caretakers. A key point for us, though, is the need for a more critical reflection on how technology is implicated in discourses of efficiency, but ought to be considered more in terms of its positive and negative impacts on care and the ability to care. So robotic milking presents an interesting case, as we've seen. It's marketed on the one hand as increasing efficiency, in terms of reducing labour demands and increasing yields, and more widely, perhaps, part of perpetuating what is an ethically problematic dairy sector anyway. But on the other hand, it's marketed as part of a regime of care for the cows, which, so the argument goes, gives the cows their subjectivity back in terms of choice and freedom while improving cow welfare. The idea that farmers are just caregivers, not caretakers, though, seems to us to be misplaced. Farmers and technologies between them should be crucial to caretaking, as opposed to sort of simply meting out care on behalf of consumers and industry technocrats. And this perhaps brings us to the second paper, which is a paper by Clemens Dreisen. And Dreisen's take on ethics is similar to our understanding of ethics as emergent and situated, and that farmers' actual ethical views and practices should be taken more seriously. He argues that multiple and changing ethical positions are possible in relation to farmers, what he refers to as a mosaic of concerns surrounding their livestock animals. Following conventions theory, he argues that different positions are legitimised or justified according to different orders of worth. And these papers between them perhaps are useful for us in thinking about technologies like robotic milking and the ethics of livestock farming. Anthony's seems to derive from a more sort of normative philosophical position on the ethics of human-non-human relations, but ends with a take on caretaking, which seems to need to be grounded in the specifics of particular farming situations, including, importantly, the role of particular technologies. But farmers as caregivers or not caretakers seem to rather be left out from this. And perhaps Dreisen's paper fills this gap, effectively positioning farmers as caretakers too, but acknowledging the ethical tangles and the multiple ethical positions that farmers get into in their relations with livestock. So just some very quick conclusions then. The introduction of robotic milking machines onto farms has had some profound effects in terms of unsettling existing farming practices and consequently unsettling the relationships between farmers and their animals. The increasing computerisation and automation of farming more widely means that not only are farmers spending less time with their animals, but their knowledge about the animals is obtained in a very different way to the traditional concept of stockmanship skills. And this is sort of prompting farmers in some ways to sort of have to renegotiate their ethical identities and their situated ethics as they relate in new ways to the animals and the technologies. And I've tried to outline three examples of this in the paper. And consequently, what we're finding is a sort of spectrum of ethical standpoints. And the nature of these situated ethics is to be contingent and fluid. And the last point then is that there's a sort of wider relevance of this project, which comes in demonstrating the powerful effect that seemingly mundane technologies like robotic milking machines that just sit in barns quietly getting on with their job day after day after day, just sitting there not actually doing particularly anything exciting. But these seemingly mundane technologies can have quite a sort of powerful effect on the reconfiguration of human-animal ethics in agricultural situations. Thank you.